afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us today. It feels good to be back, doesn't it, Tim?
It feels like it's been a while. I know we say that a lot, but we changed our summer schedule, and we don't get to talk as often as we used to, so it's nice to see you.
There's just been, likewise, it's very nice to see you too. It's just, there's a lot of interviews. A lot of stuff's been just moving around a lot, and so the routine is not there. And I like a nice routine. Obviously, I had my child. I'm doing the house build. You're busy with your love life. Everybody wants to know what's going on with that. And so there's a lot of, you know, moving parts. But I think it's, we need to just slow it down. It's nice, everybody, to just take a step back. You know what I mean? And evaluate where you're at in life, your situation. And I think we should do that as a show and as a friendship, Tim. We need to just take a step back. How are we doing? No one ever asked me how I'm doing.
Let's talk about us.
I was actually just having a conversation with my good friend Neil Witkowski the other day. And your name popped up because he listens to the show. It always does. It always seems to do. And he's like, how's Tim? I'm like, you know, he's just deep in love. What can I say? He's doing really, really good. And then the topic evolved into, well, you must be getting close to popping the question. And then myself being who I am, I asked Neil, I said, I wonder if I'll be one of the groomsmen. And I'm not putting you on the spot right now, but Neil said, you think you'd have to be. And I go, I would hope so. I said, I can't be the best man because his brother, you know, is earmarked for that position. But man, imagine me just sitting on the end, the fifth groomsman. Oh, man, the pictures would be incredible.
How about we have a deal? I'm a groomsman. You're a groomsman when I'm a godfather. That's fair. You've had plenty of opportunity. You've had like six kids since you've known me. So
that's true. We try to pick really solid practicing Catholics. So I think if you clean up your life a little bit, then we can have a conversation. You know, tit for tat, Tim.
That's fair.
That is fair. But anyways, how are you doing? How is your love life? How is the missus?
Yeah, all is good. All is good. We're just kind of gearing up and planning everything for Key West in a few weeks. I think that's in the first week of October, so that's coming right up, and then holiday planning and all that. Thinking about the GLI, which we're excited for. Julia's from Michigan, so I think she's going to have some family come up for the tournament too, who you'll get to meet. So she's going to come with. And
Nice.
Yeah,
we'll be there with Michigan Tech, obviously. Won't miss that. But yeah, that's very good. We, myself, not that you asked, I'll just start on my own. We bought some more chickens, Tim. Very exciting. So we lost a couple to the fox. We're still, you know, trying to deal with that. But we bought five more from the same lady who gave us the initial eight influx of, you know, at the beginning of summer. And it's funny when you introduce the new chickens, the fighting initially. So we dropped the five into the coop. The two old gals immediately assert their dominance. And I figured out where the pecking order phrase comes from because they just go at each other. I should video it. It's ruthless. It's absolutely ruthless. And the two older gals are bigger, and they right away bomb in. I'm the boss. Peck, peck, peck. That's enough. But then after that, there's still seven more. And between those seven, there is another pecking order. And so those seven go at each other. So whether there is a distinct 9-1, Tim, totem pole of who's at the top and who's at the bottom. It's an amazing thing to watch.
It's like a baseball lineup. You know who's at the top and the bottom.
And it trickles down for everything. So the top eats first and the bottom doesn't eat. And then it goes through like water. Every aspect of their life is controlled by that hierarchy. It's pretty neat to see. It's what humans should be. Oh, man. Imagine if we lived like 500 years ago. Oh, terrific.
We'd both be dead by now.
No, to speak for yourself, Mr. I get injured in hockey without anybody touching me. I think I'd be doing pretty good.
Yeah, no, you maybe. Do the girls like the chicken stuff, or do they get upset when they're pecking at each other?
Oh, they enjoy it. Yeah, because it's fun. Like they know they're not going to kill each other, but they actually enjoy the fight. It's good. They still comment because remember I did that tug of war. With those teenagers in the summer. I still have a scar in the back of my arm from when I fell into the fence after the win. And so they still comment, that was so fun, Dad. So they love the competition. And they enjoy the cockfighting. That's what it is, essentially. But with the women. Well, let's move on to some hockey stuff, Tim. I know you don't want to talk about that much anymore, but before we get to that, this episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropper and the Gloves. You should open an account today at Bet365 and bet on a huge range of markets. So wherever the sport, whatever the moment, it is never ordinary. At Bet365, use code HOCKEYCA. That's Bet365HOCKEYCA. Check it out, everybody. Win some money. Football's back. I won my fantasy first week. Not too shabby. My number one pick didn't play so well. I'm on St. Brown, wide receiver from Detroit. But yeah, I did pretty good overall. 1-0. I'm very excited about that. Hockey's around the corner, Tim. Lots to bet on. So get the Bet365. Use our code HOCKEYCA. Give us a little bump, if you know what I mean. All right. Fabian Zetterlund, San Jose Shark. I'll be completely frank, everybody. I didn't say this to Fabian, but Tim lines up some of the interviews, and he sent me a text saying, the fans want this kid from San Jose to come on the show, Fabian Zetterlund. And I initially said back to Tim, I said, is he like a kid reporter? Is that who it is? Because I was out in Northport. I was doing stuff. And he goes, no, he scored 25 goals last year, ding dong. And I go, oh, that Fabian Zetterlund. So I wasn't too well versed on Fabian as probably I should have been. But I was humbled. Great kid. Great interview. Two interviews in a row, our audio got a little janky, but it was a good talk with him.
Yeah, that part was frustrating, but I thought it was great. He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. I liked hearing him talk about his friendship with Eklund. I thought that was funny. And just a very exciting time for the Sharks fan. That was my biggest takeaway. And even like the rookie stuff last week, Will Smith and Calabrini are living with Marlowe and Thornton.
Isn't that cool?
In San Jose. Just amazing. It's just really, really cool. And Zetterlund, I think, is an important part of that team. He's the bridge between the veterans and the young kids. Hopefully he stays in the top six and can build on that effort from last year.
I wonder if Marlowe and Thornton get any money for housing him, like a billet host would, right? I wonder if that's baked into that agreement. You take Macklin, you take Will, and we'll throw you a bone, you know, food costs, just general disruption in the house. Because like Will Smith, he is almost the same age as some of Patrick Marleau's sons. So they're very close in age. So there's that dynamic. And then Macklin Calabrini is like, Jumbo's got two kids, but they're a little younger, but still, I don't know. I even asked my wife if she would want a hockey player living with her. And myself, I wouldn't want a young stud walking around, shirt off in the house. Another cock in the hen house, like we were talking about earlier.
Knowing what you know about those guys, which of the two do you think is a more strict host? Who's going to be the one like, hey, listen up, house rules?
You know the answer to that.
Marlowe?
Yeah, 100%. Jumbo is going to be like, let's go out, baby. Let's go swim in the pool. He's like, I got a game tomorrow. No, whatever,
don't
baby.
Don't go to bed.
Come on. Let's go. Like that's, and Patty is going to be like, did you read your scouting report? Did you get your vitamins? Did you this and that? Should we go work on stick handling in the driveway? Like that'll be Patty. So Will Smith will overtake Calabrini this season based on living arrangements. That's all. But yeah, what a tough name, Will Smith. Will Smith used to be one of my favorite actors. And he really went sideways with the whole Oscars slapping Chris Rock. And then his stuff with his wife, if you really dig into that a little bit, that's a strange situation there. Oof, not good. And now he's got Will Smith playing in San Jose. So interesting. And California. And I was also thinking, we'll move on from this in a second. Has there ever been a team in the NHL that has, you know, not a brand new team like a Seattle Kraken or a Vegas Golden Knights, an expansion team? San Jose has been around the block for 20, 30 years now. Has there ever been a team with this much history who has just all of a sudden day one started a rookie center first line and a rookie center second line that the Sharks are slated to do? Macklin Calabrini and Will Smith. That's their 1A, 2A for their center options. Right? Two rookies.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I can think of would be Crosby, Malkin, but they weren't rookies the same year.
Yeah. I don't know. Just something to think about. It's pretty rare for two rookies to come in and all of a sudden be They're starting centermen for the first line and the second line for a franchise that's been around like the San Jose Sharks has. I know they were bad, but still pretty neat, pretty neat. Moving on, though. We got a big show. We're going to get into the division previews. We're getting really, really close to the season. Players are starting to report to camp. They're trickling in. We talked to Fabian Zetterlund last week. He just got to San Jose. You see all the media, the articles. Oh, this guy's here. This guy's here. They're going to be here soon. The players are skating together. They're getting the unofficial practices going. It's always fun to do that where the team leaders get the skates and they do the drills. The coaches will feed them drills sometimes to do during the skates. And it's just a good time for the players to come and just get to know everybody. You know, talking to Fabian Zetterlund, he's like, I have not talked to anybody. Talking to other players, I haven't talked to this person or that person. So it's going to be interesting to go and see the new guys and you know, explore the rink a little bit. So it's always fun. So we're going to do division previews because the season's around the corner. We're going to start with the Metro Division. Tim just threw it out. I said, fine, let's go for it. And the Metro, Tim, was once always known. I say the last 5 years. It was maybe the last 10, 15. You can lock them in for maybe an Eastern Conference final and or a Stanley Cup contender. You know, Tampa Bay kind of wrinkled that a little bit. Toronto's always been knocking on the door in the Atlantic Division. But all in all, the Metro, they've had Washington for a long time. They've had Pittsburgh for a long time. The Islanders were playing fantastic the last 5, 6 years. Then all of a sudden, Carolina and the Rangers the last 4 or 5 years have asserted their dominance in that division. So they've been really good. But I could say maybe this year, a regression of sorts for the division as a whole. They're not so imposing as they were in years past. The East used to be a dominant division the last 4 or 5 years. This year, not so much, I think. What do you, as a whole, from the Metro Division, Tim, what do you see here?
Yeah, there's really not a lot of strong teams. There's a lot of teams that are either bad or have so many questions or just there's things to be excited about the future, but it's not right now. I'm looking at Columbus, of course, the Flyers. I'm not big on the Islanders. I'm not big on the Capitals. I know they were both playoff teams last year.
Wow.
I like Pittsburgh. I obviously like the Devils, as you know. And you have obviously at the top, the Rangers and Hurricanes are as good as any two teams. But I think this is a team where more, I think maybe three max make the, I know three minimum will make the playoffs. I think the wild card is going to be completely on the Atlantic.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, let's just jump into it. The team that won the division last year, the New York Rangers, 114 points, had a pretty unscathed regular season, Tim. Not a lot of injuries, not a lot of big news coming out of the Rangers. Lafreniere played really good. Capocacco, I guess, would be the one issue. He was injured. He came back. He played solid, but nothing of note. But same old with them. Strong on the back end, really good up front in the regular season. They were the juggernaut going into the playoffs. They were the really, really trendy pick to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. And what happened with them? They lose in the Eastern Conference Finals to obviously the eventual Stanley Cup champions, the Florida Panthers. What did you think of the New York Rangers last year as a whole? And what? Well, let's just start there. How was their season? Fantastic, right? Did it remind you of the Boston Bruins the year before?
Very much so. The dominant regular season. But if you go back to last year, I was not high on the Rangers really at all. I don't think they're that good of a team. And I don't think, as we saw in the playoffs, that they're the guys you can rely on in the postseason. Shesterkin, to me, is not a question. I think he was a little bit, you know, not quite himself in the playoffs, but a lot of it had to do with the team in front of him. I think he's just an automatic lock. I think the defense is pretty good. But I just, you didn't have the forwards show up when it mattered most. I'm looking at Panarin. I'm looking at Kreider. Even Adam Fox, I would throw in there, who I know wasn't battling an injury, but it was Trocheck and then occasional glimpses from everyone else. But he was the guy that showed up when he should be like he's your second line guy. He's your fourth or fifth best forward. He should not be the guy that the only one you're leaning on. So overall, pretty disappointing for the Rangers, and I don't see how it's going to be better this year.
Yeah. And I think that's a theme between the teams that are underperforming in the playoffs. And we've said it before, and we talked about this with the next team for a long time we'll get to, but you need to have your highest paid players be your best players. And last year with the Rangers, when they were playing the Panthers, it was Trocheck and Lafreniere. Those two guys played fantastic, night in and night out, doing it all over the ice. Like, they were the two that stood out. But then Kreider, Zibanejad, I've said enough on him. He was frustrating to watch, not trying in the offensive zone, not trying in the defensive zone whatsoever, scoring a couple goals here and there, but nothing nearly to where he should be. And then Kreider, you're a power forward. You're a moose of a man. And he's just out there joking around with Sam Bennett, like just having a good time, just getting buried behind the net, not having a response, not really stepping up when the moment needs you to step up. This is the Eastern Conference Finals. You could go to the Stanley Cup Final. So he really disappointed me in that essence. And then Panarin, you know, he's a great player. You can critique him. He needs to do better. When you're making plus $11 million and you're the face of the franchise, you have to do better. The same goes for Adam Fox. And I don't know the injuries they were going through, but it just wasn't good enough. And then I think Jacob Trouba got exposed a little bit last year. His age, his durability, his mobility, not really kind of up to pace with the NHL these days. And he just tried to go for too many big hits, cost his teams a little bit too much. And Condre Miller, he had some tough games too. So I like the defense, Tim. I don't love it. It's been the same defense for the last 4 years. I feel like Schneider should take a step forward this year. Trouba should take a big step back, and they should readjust the ice times for these guys. Adam Fox obviously is going to do what he does, but all in all, they didn't make any big moves this offseason. You lose Roslovic, you bring in Riley Smith, nothing major there. I think the big question is, can they mimic what these other teams have done in years past? The Washington Capitals, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Chicago Blackhawks, all these teams that we talk about that have learned from the losing and take the step forward. Win that game, win that round, go to the Stanley Cup Finals, win the Stanley Cup. Can they do that? Because it seems like for the last 3-4 years, the Rangers are a trendy pick in the offseason. They go out and they make a lot of smart moves at free agency. The trade deadline comes, they make a lot of smart moves at the trade deadline, and then they just stall out in the playoffs. And it's because of those top guys. So can they learn from this? I don't know. In my gut, I say no. But I can be persuaded otherwise if you show me something. But it's just been status quo for them for the last few years. Where you have a really good regular season, you have a star goaltender in Shesterkin, and then you get to the second round and you just can't compete. You get to the third round and you just can't compete. What do you think?
I think one of the things we always talk about in the postseason is how those second, third, fourth line guys are the ones that make the difference, because everyone has a great first line. Everyone's going to – they cancel each other out to some degree. And you look at all the cup-winning teams, it's like – It's the third, fourth guy. It's William Karlsson. It's Chandler Stephenson. You know what I mean? Like, it's Darren Helm for the Red Wings. All these guys, Sean Thornton, that just step up in the big moments and just do something that the other team's third and fourth line isn't doing. And you don't really see that with the Rangers. Like, who in that team, that bottom six is pretty thin. And I think they deserve more criticism from the hockey community the same way that Toronto does. Not exactly the same situation, but like, this is a big market team with big market players that is totally underdeveloped and underperformed, and they should be more under the gun, which kind of brings me to the next team we'll talk about in a minute, like the pressure entering the season, because they're going to be feeling it, and they should.
Yeah, I will just say the reason we don't get to the third and fourth line critique for the Rangers is because the first and second aren't producing. And yeah, maybe there is some criticism to go to, you know, the Hedl and the Vessies and the Cullies and stuff, but you can't get past the Binnajet. You can't get past Kreider, Panarin. And those other teams, you talk about the Sean Thorntons and the Blarka Gaudreaus and the Colemans, those top lines were still producing, right? Like, they were still putting up points on the power play and getting decent, you know, zone time. And it wasn't like they were shut out. These guys go completely quiet for long stretches. And I'm not talking like a couple periods, games at a time, where they disappear when they absolutely need you the most. So I think you have to start with the obvious, but the third and fourth line, there is some blame to be shared there, but boy, it starts at the top with these things. All right, moving on to the team you're alluding to, the Carolina Hurricanes. They lost in the second round to the aforementioned New York Rangers. And the difference between years past and this year for the Carolina Hurricanes is they went for it, Tim. They went all in. There was a piece out there, Jake Guentzel. Everybody wanted him. Everybody needed him. He was the goal scorer. He was the X factor for a lot of teams. Vancouver was hot and heavy for him. The Bruins were kicking the tires on him. A lot of teams, everybody was in on Jake Guentzel. The Carolina Hurricanes pried him out of Pittsburgh. They got him, and they still failed. They lose in the second round and didn't really go out with a bang. they went out with sort of a whimper. There was a lot of question marks around this team. Are they just a perennial playoff team? You know, good in the regular season, all around. The question before the season was, can a team win the Stanley Cup without a superstar? Obviously, we had Jake Guentzel on the show. He said, Sebastian Aho is a superstar. I disagree. I very much disagree. I think Sebastian Aho is a great hockey player. He's not in the upper echelon of superstars. I think he's really, really good, but he's not a superstar. Can they win without a superstar? You bring in Jake Guentzel, maybe a superstar, kind of on that cusp as well, but they couldn't do it. They let him walk in the offseason. They add Sean Walker. They re-sign Jakob Slavin. They get William Carrier. Gostisbehere comes in. They get Roslovic from the Rangers, but you lose a couple good defensemen in Pesce and who's the other guy they lost? Some other guy. Yeah. But anyways, did the team get better this year? Maybe a little bit. But I think the bigger question, Tim, is are they just stuck in that second tier group? Is this the team that's going to win a Stanley Cup, or are they just a perennial kind of middle of the tier group? You have the Stanley Cup contenders and then they're just always right there.
Yeah, that's a fair question. Because every year, this is the team that we say, okay, this is their year. I picked them entering the playoffs last year to win it all, or at least go to the finals versus Dallas was my finals pick. And you look at their roster, it's not better. In fact, it's worse. And even if you think the Guentzel thing, well, they only added him as a rental. So losing him isn't really a loss compared to last year's team as a whole. But there are a lot of core pieces that are missing now. The things that I am excited about for them, obviously re-signing the RFAs, Jarvis and Nietzsche, it was huge. That was not a lock. That was not a sure thing. So bringing them in long-term is really exciting. And I'll save this a little bit until we get into like our bold predictions episode, probably closer to the start of the season. But I'm expecting a big year from Martin Nietzsche, however you say it. I am hoping that he's the one that takes a step forward, because going back to Aho, whether or not he's a superstar, we can argue about, but one thing we know that they don't have is like a superstar goal scorer, right? And I think you've seen enough from Jarvis that he can be a perennial 30 goal scorer. I think Nietzsche is probably wants to be that too. So, and then obviously Svechnikov is a 30 goal scorer if he's healthy. So there is some goal scoring depth, but you need to know which of them gets the puck with the game on the line. Right now we don't know who that person is, and which of them is going to be the guy in the playoffs. And so I'm hoping for good things for this team. And I think a lot of the losses they have probably won't end up being as bad as we thought. Similar to the Bruins, where they lost all these key guys. You're like, oh man, what do they do without them? And they're just basically just as good in the regular season anyway. So I think they'll be fine. And I hope that they are able to take a step forward, and that these same guys that like Nietzsche, like Jarvis, like Svechnikov can stay healthy and produce the way that we know they can. And then that they have the situation between the pipes filled up, because that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, listen, I think they're good. I think they'll be right there at the top of the division. They were 3 points behind the Rangers for first in the division. So they won't regress that bad. I think they're slightly worse this coming season than when they were last season. I think the defense is not as good, even though they got, you know, Walker and Orlov and Gostisbehere, and you got Burns. He's getting a little older, but it was Pesci I was thinking about.
No, you know, said Pesci.
Oh, then it's Slavin. So he re-signed. Gosh, who was the other guy? I just had my tongue on. It was Brady Shea. So you lose those two guys. Those are big pieces on the back end. I think that, you know, takes a toll on this team. They were such a huge part of the just eating minutes. So, and yeah, the goaltenders. Who's going to be the starter? You know, I just think there's a lot of unanswered questions. They'll be close. They'll be at the top of the division. But I just don't see it from the Carolina Hurricanes. I think they're perpetually in that bridesmaid, never the bride situation.
Who do you think is under more pressure between them and the Rangers to have a good season and do something in the playoffs?
I think it's the Rangers. Oddly enough, they both spend to the cap. They both have really, really great players, but I think the Rangers have that superstar status with Panarin and Svechnikov and Fox. They have the cachet. They're playing in Madison Square Garden.
Svechnikov.
Shesterkin. Sorry, I was thinking of the goaltender. But they just are under the lights more often. So I just think there's more pressure there. But it should be the same. It shouldn't be that way, because most of these teams have the potential to win a Stanley Cup, and they both just seem to fumble it away at the first chance that they can get. All right, moving on. The New York Islanders, Tim. What do you say about this team? lost in the first round of the Carolina Hurricanes. Really not much of a pushback. They finally got rid of that fourth line or a big part of it in Clutterbuck and Matt Martin, who's been there, it seems like, for the better part of two decades. They didn't do much in free agency. They signed Anthony Duclair. They bring in the big addition, Maxine Slipikov from Russia, 25-year-old from Spartak. He was a big UFA. Apparently, everybody was in on him, and the New York Islanders got him. He scored 31 goals, 47 assists, a million points in 65 games last year in the KHL. So he's the guy who's going to come in and change this around. But my question is, like, are you really banking your season on a journeyman forward and Anthony Duclair? And not a rookie, but a young Russian coming over and revamping your left side and giving you that boost that you need to get over the hump, be a contender in your division, take the next step in the playoffs, and to be, you know, a Stanley Cup contender. Is that what you're banking it on? Because I don't think it's going to work.
I don't think they are. I think they're banking on, first, their goaltenders being who they probably see as the best tandem in the league. And if you look at, if you equally value the starter and the backup, that's probably true. Sorokin had a down year for his standards last year. I think he was hoping to do what he'd been doing in prior years and be a top three, top five goaltender, which he just wasn't. He's actually outperformed by Varlamov, even though Sorokin got the bulk of the start. So I think expecting a bounce back year from him is going to be critical for this team. And then I'm looking at the top of the lineup with Matthew Barzal. Really solid year, 80 points, as someone corrected me in the comments the other day. 23 goals, 57 assists. You need him as a point per game guy, and probably more, because you don't really have, like, if you look at their lineup, like, you really like Brock Nelson, you like Horvat, you like Lee and Pageau and Palmieri. But if there's one guy that could be like a legit star in this league, in this lineup, it's Barzal. On the forward side. And so I think you want to see more from him. And then Noah Dobson is, I don't know if it's quiet, but I know on this show, we certainly don't recognize him enough. He's a stud defenseman. He's putting up crazy points, 70 points last year. And we think of like the Heiskanens and McCars and McAvoys, and Noah Dobson's right there with that group, at least when you look at his points. So I think those are the guys they rely on, and hopefully that they have enough. This is a deep team. You know, this is a deeper team. They have four good lines. They have some good defensemen. I think it's just, do they have some star power that can push them through?
And I think they do. Like, I know you think it's Matthew Barzal. I think Bo Horvat has another level that he can go to. And I really like the vets. I like Brock Nelson. I like Anderlies. I always have great expectations for this team. When I look at them, I go, this team is really dangerous. I like the way they're put together. They have a deep, solid forward group that's veteran-laden. They know how to play the tough way to play the game. They grind it out in the corners. They're big bodies. They know how to score a tough goal when goals are hard to get. The defense is solid. There's no, you know, weakness on the back end. Everybody's solid. They bring in Mike Riley. He's a good defense, you know, D-man. You put him in 5-6, you could protect him, play him against the fourth line, the third line. You can't get him exposed. But they always seem to just underperform and disappoint me. And I don't know why. But I'm hoping this year they can put it all together and have a good, solid season. Like, I like their first line's great. Bo Horvat, Barzal, and whatever you want to put Duclair or that Slipikov there. I think that's a good first line. Brock Nelson, he's a solid second line center. Kyle Palmieri, maybe not, but you have a good 1-2-3-4 centerman. And then your defense is good. All of the ingredients that I like on a team, they have. But they just constantly disappoint. So I'm hoping they can take the next step. This is my team. I know you're in on the Devils. They're going to have a bounce back year. I think the Islanders are going to have a good season this year. I really want them to. I really, really do. They have good goaltending. They have a good defensive core, decent all-around lineup. I can't figure out why they don't succeed. I really can't. This is the year, though, Tim. This is the year they're going to take that next step. Believe me. All in on the Islanders. All right.
I'm not.
The last team that made the playoffs last year, the Cinderella story, Washington Capitals, somehow, some way managed to win enough games, get enough points to make it into the playoffs. They were a terrible team last year. If you look at the analytics, if you just did the eye test, this team had no business being in the playoffs, but they cobbled enough points, got into the playoffs, and just resoundingly got swept in the first round by the New York Rangers. Wasn't really that close at all. They lose Max Pacioretty, but then the GM, Tim, goes wild. What did he do this offseason?
He was pretty busy. The big one, the big, you know, the blue chip guy they brought in was Jacob Chychrun, however you say it. We get it wrong every time. But stud, he hasn't quite put up the numbers we thought he would. Coming out of Arizona, we think talented team, right opportunity, good power play. He's going to be a 60, 70, 80 point defenseman. He hasn't done that, but he is a very good. He can eat the minutes. He can play all situations. He's really a number one defenseman who was playing kind of as a number two in Ottawa with Shabbat and the other and Sanderson. So anyway, Chychrun, I think, is going to be such a good complement to Carlson. I don't know if they're going to pair them together or not, but he certainly takes a lot of pressure off of Carlson, who's putting up a lot of points, but getting older, getting a little bit slower. So that's big for them. Obviously, Pierre-Luc Dubois, we're going to talk about him in a minute, and some he's been in the media again this week. Mangiapane, Logan Thompson in net. Like, these are good pieces that we're excited about. And then a friend of the show, Matt Roy, who we talked to like right after all these signings came through, including him. And he's like, yeah, these are the good players. Like it's an exciting time right now. So I think so much of it has to do with obviously Ovechkin's goal chase. I don't know if they really see themselves as a contender. I think it's more about putting a competitive team on the ice. And from a business perspective, like milking every dollar of winning games that you can, while your team's relevant, because in a couple of years it's going to take a big hit, and I think it's smart and it's exciting to watch. So yeah, there's a lot of things happening. Do I expect them to make the playoffs? I would say probably not.
Wow, no, that's crazy. See, I think those additions are great. I think Logan Thompson is a big addition coming in from Vegas. He was their starter until he gets injured, and Aiden Hill comes in and obviously wins the Stanley Cup and takes the net from Logan Thompson. He's a good goalie. Could be a great goalie if you give him enough time in the net. He was the guy in Vegas. He got Marc-Andre Fleury in Vegas, just like Marc-Andre Fleury got when, who's the guy who came in? What's his name? I'm have Robin Lehner.
Yeah.
But anyways, I like what they've done. I don't think I'm as high on Chychrun as you are. I don't think he's going to get 70, 60 points. I don't think he's that guy. He's just a moose of a defenseman who's going to be a solid safety blanket for John Carlson, who's going to crush guys. I think he's a good, solid defenseman. And you got Matt Roy and Rasmus Sandin. You have the yin and the yang in the top two pairings. The offensive guy who's going to get up in the rush and his safety blanket. Then you got Sandin, who's going to get out there and move, and Matt Roy, who's going to protect him and make up for all his mistakes or turnovers that he makes because he's being aggressive. I like that back end. And up front, it's not bad. Last year, they were maybe a one-line team, if you could call Strom, Ovechkin, and Wilson a first line. Maybe not. Now they have some depth. I still don't love their forward groups. They're going to have to win a lot of games like they did last year, get a couple on the power play, get a couple lucky bounces. I don't love this team. They're a lot better than they were last year. And then Pierre-Luc Dubois. What is it like? Why does he not get out of his own way? Why do interviews? I don't understand the reasoning by him doing this. What is he saying, Tim?
Yeah, so there's two different stories here. The first one was from Elliot Friedman, who went on his show and talked about a story that he heard where Rob Blake, who's the GM of the Kings, went down to the ice, on the ice, at a practice or before practice, whatever, skating with Dubois, and talked to him about battling. Basically, like, the importance of fighting more for the puck, for your teammates, whatever. Which is kind of crazy because everyone's saying, is this really, and I know Rob Blake is who he is, but it's strange for a GM to be the one to do that. Where is the coach saying, listen, I can't get through to him? Or is Blake seeing something that he wants to handle personally? It's a little bit strange. So let's pause there for a second. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've never had a GM who was a Hall of Famer, right? I've never had a GM who has that kind of resume as a hockey player, but I guess I had Patty LaFontaine in Buffalo for a week and then he quit. That was a strange situation. But yeah, it definitely sends a message to the player. You know, the coach is not getting through whatever's happening there. So the GM is frustrated enough to say, I'm lacing him up. Let's go get on the ice. I'm going to put you through your paces. Like, that is a strong message to a player. If the GM is saying, you need to be tougher and I'm going to show you how to play tougher. I'm a 50-year-old man. And I'm going to dominate you on the ice probably. So yeah, that's a message sent to Pierre-Luc Dubois. And it obviously did not sink in. It did not get through because he got traded right after the season. And Rob Blake he was at his wit's end with this guy to the point he's lacing him up and getting on the ice as a GM of a professional team. You don't see that every day. It's very strange for that to happen.
So the next thing here is he was interviewed and he spoke about why it didn't work out in LA. And I'm going to read a couple of quick snippets from it. But if you're interested in the story at all, like, go find the articles and the interviews, because it's very fascinating. But the main reason that he gave was, quote, "I didn't really know what was expected of me." So we talked about how we first got there and had the meetings with McClellan and whatever, and like never had a clearly painted out role on the team, according to him. He said, quote, "Take it as you will, but I've always needed to have clear instructions to do my job 100%. I get mixed up there in the gray areas. I question myself too much. I've been working on that since I was young. And there, from my first conversation with the team, I didn't really know what was expected of me. I didn't know where I stood. You can't play well when you question yourself too much." To me, I'm going to go first this time. To me, this sounds like you're an eight and a half, I think it was, is what he's making, right? He's not being told, Dubois, Pierre-Luc Dubois, you are the most important part of this team. You are the bedrock of our offense. We want you as 1C. We want you on power play 1. We need you to thrive in that role. They probably made him earn it. They probably said, listen, I don't care what you're making. You need to find your spot in this lineup. You need to earn every minute. And he didn't do it. He's like, wait a minute. If I'm making 8.5 and I don't know where I'm in the lineup, how am I supposed to do my job? That's what it sounds like to me. I'm obviously not in the room. I'm playing with this a little bit. But, John, what do you think?
Well, so if I'm a welder and I go into work, I'm probably going to have to weld, right? I'm going to see some metal and I'm going to have to weld it together. If I'm a carpenter, I'm going to have to nail some boards together, build something. You're a hockey player. Do you need to be told what to do? Hey, Pierre-Luc Dubois, don't like just shut it down in the defensive zone. Oh, good. I'm glad you told me that, because I was going to. Oh, good, good, good. Hey, Pierre-Luc Dubois, maybe get a heartbeat on the forecheck. Oh, nice. Thanks, Rob. Thanks, GM. I'll do that. Hey, Pierre, maybe battle a little bit in the hard areas. Oh, that's a good idea. You want me to do that? We would love if you did that. Like, how dumb do you need to be if you're a hockey player and you have to be told what to do? I didn't know what my expectations were. It's to be a good hockey player, right? It's not rocket science. This isn't splitting atoms. You drop the puck and you play good hockey. You're making $8.5 million. You should know that by now. By my second year in the NHL, I knew my expectations. I didn't need a coach or a GM to come to me and say, hey, John, you should probably fight that guy. Or we need you to hit. We need you to be physical. Well, okay. Yeah. Because I was going to try to toe drag some guys and, you know, and dangle. It's like, you know what you're going to do. You know who you are. And so this is just a cop out. This is him throwing blame at the Kings. I didn't know what they wanted me to do. Put the puck in the net and not let the other team score on you. It's really simple. And he's just trying to deflect. It's not my fault. It's their fault. They didn't tell me what to do. It's so insanely stupid that he would even say this. It doesn't even boil my blood. I just shake my head and go, you're an idiot. Like, you're completely just clueless, man. If you're saying these types of things, that's the reason I didn't do good. That's the reason why. They didn't tell me what to do. It's like, okay, sounds good. The new coach is going to have to set you aside and go, now, Pierre, we really want you to do this, this, and this, and this. You're so dumb. Anything else on this situation, Tim?
No. Just I'm thinking now. I'm trying to play his defense. The only thing I can think of that might have created confusion was just the fact that they had three good centers, including him. So he was like, am I an offensive center? Am I a checking center? My scoring, you know, where my second, third line, where do I fit? Not defending it, but trying to get into his mindset where, like, they already have to know they have Kopitar. Where am I in this hierarchy?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you play terrible defensively and not try, yeah. Right? Like, yeah, you can maybe take a few chances here or there, but you still have to try hard and be a good all-around hockey player. And he wasn't doing that. And it's pretty obvious where you are when you walk into that room and you see the jersey colors in the lineup chart. Not in the first line. I'm not with Kempe and Byfield. Okay. message sent.
How big a deal is it when someone who's paid that much money relative to the team to be dressing starting on the fourth line?
Oh, it's like, huge.
It's going to vary depending on like who they are, and every personality is different, every situation different. But like, just say that like Derek Stepan was playing horrible. He's like, hey, Derek, you're between, you know, whoever now.
Yeah.
Brandon Prust and whoever. Like, is the whole room like awkward when that gets announced? Is that?
Oh, yeah. The guys talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Like it's like the elephant in the room. It's obvious. So he's just an idiot and he's deflecting. All right, moving on. The Pittsburgh Penguins missed the playoffs last year. Obviously lost Jake Guentzel. Deadline casualty. Couldn't keep him, weren't going to sign him. They got rid of Riley Smith. They traded for Rutger McGrody, and they got Kevin Haves from St. Louis in a strange move. Basically, it comes down to the vets, right, Tim? 81, 71, Letang, Carlson. How are they going to work out? In my eyes, this team is done. It's absolutely done. There's nothing to be excited for. Crosby's working on a new deal. I don't know why he would want to stay there. He must love Pittsburgh a lot, because this team is not going to win. In my eyes, I don't see anything there that excites me whatsoever. This team is just doomed to be around a 500 team, maybe making the playoffs. And if they do, they're going to just be beat badly in the first round. Convince me I'm wrong, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know that I can. They are significantly worse than last year because they've lost probably their best goal scorer. It really comes down to one question, like you said, is how much do those top guys still have left in the tank? The Crosby, Malkin, I'd throw Letang in there. And then they have some decent secondary pieces. I think if Kevin Hayes is your fifth, sixth, seventh best forward, that's pretty good. Brian Rust is still pretty good. Like, they have some pieces there, but it's about that guy. Like, last year, Crosby was willing his team into some wins, especially later in the season. And Guentzel talked about like how much the conversation they had, like, we have a chance, we got to keep winning. They weren't able to do it. I don't think it's going to be easier this year. The only thing that makes me give them a chance at a playoff spot is if like Philly still doesn't take a step forward, the Capitals don't gel together, the Islanders goalies don't play well again, and there's like an open spot for the second wild card or something.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there's not a whole lot to be excited about.
Listen, Crosby's 37, Malkin's 38. Letang's 37, Carlson's 34. Those are your four most important players, and they're all and they're older than that because they played a ton of playoff games too. So that this team should be done. They should have just sold and shipped everyone out 2 years ago when I told them to, but they didn't. They re-upped and they signed all those guys again. So now here they are. All right, moving on. Philadelphia Flyers missed the playoffs after a pretty good regular season. Everybody was surprised by them. They were constantly in the top two, top three in this Metro division. Then all of a sudden, the last month of the season hits, and they just tanked. They were losing games they should have won. There was turmoil in the locker room. It was complete chaos. I was there for it. Moving on. You got some new blood coming in. You get Mikhov Matveyev coming in. You get connecting to big money. Can they avoid that late season collapse, Tim? Is this team going to be a playoff team?
I'm going to say no. This is a team that shouldn't have been a playoff team at all, and they weren't. But, like, they were in the conversation. They were in the playoff for most of the season, if I'm remembering correctly. They surprised everyone. It had mostly to do with Tortorella. I think the thing I'm looking at this year is obviously this Matvei Mishkov. Like,
that's what it is. That's what it was. I was close.
He is just supposed to be, like, an absolute phenom talent. And people think he's going to be instantly an 80-point guy or something like that. Maybe he is, and it changes their entire dynamic of that team. I don't know that it's going to happen year one.
Yeah.
So I think you're just looking at, like, what can they put together and how do the new pieces fit under Torts' system and all that. I don't think they're a playoff team. I think they are still probably a year or two from having the team that they want. They've been in the process of clearing house, getting rid of contracts, moving pieces around. I think there's still a few more they'd like to move around. But I think Mishkov is the thing that's going to make them exciting to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I like some of their pieces. They have some good young players coming in. They have some decent players on the back end. And, you know, I like the trade, the addition of Jamie Drysdale. I think he'll be good for this team. It's just not this year. I agree. So I think they will be fun to watch. I don't see them having the success that they had last year, being in a playoff position the whole time. But who knows? Torts can drag anyone along. All right, the New Jersey Devils. We're getting a little long here. Let's pick it up a little bit. New Jersey Devils. What do you see from them this year?
Yeah, this is basically a bounce back year for them, I think. This is what they're hoping to do. They, 2 years ago, they kind of ran into a heavier team, couldn't keep up, and got exposed for the lack of playoff experience, the lack of physicality and size. And so I think we thought they would do even better last year, and they didn't. A lot of it had to do with injuries to the two most important guys, arguably, Hamilton and Jack Hughes. Hamilton obviously missed most of the year. Jack Hughes missed only a chunk of it, but it did add up. So I think I'm looking at those guys saying, can they stay healthy? Can the team bounce back? And then obviously Jacob Markstrom, the big trade, the big piece. He is, can he stay healthy? Can he be the Markstrom that he's been in the past? He's getting a little bit older too. What is he, 34, 35? Mm-hmm. Can he be healthy? And then I think if all those things fit together, I think we see a bounce back. And this is the team, as you know, I'm excited about. I think they're in a playoff spot. I think they're third in the division.
Yeah. That's what they should have been last year. They should have been first or second in the division. Yep. Timo Meier, that's why Palat went there. This is a good team on paper. It's just, can they put it all together? They have a deep team. I like all Eric Halla. I think he's a solid third-line center. I think if you put him in the right situation, he could have been a second or a first-line center. Put him in Minnesota, where he was. He's a superstar, potentially. I like his talents. But again, can Dougie play 82? I think it's him. If Dougie doesn't play 82 and he doesn't play solid, he doesn't have to be a superstar. You know, you brought in Brett Pesce just in case. I like that move too.
Yep.
But it's Hamilton and it's Markstrom. Can those two guys revert back to who they were 3-4 years ago? If they do, this is going to be a good team. The question I want to ask you, Tim. Jack Hughes, 100 points?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. You heard it here first. He said that for 3 straight years, everybody, so don't get too excited. He always thinks he's going to get 100 points. He never has yet. All right. Last in the division, obviously, Columbus Blue Jackets. I think you just need to play this year out. Johnny Gaudreau, obviously, terrible passing, tragic. Patrick Laine traded away. You just need to get through this year. This is going to be a tough season. You're going to be under the salary cap. They're going to do an exemption because Johnny was making a decent amount. This team will be bad, and it will be a tough season for them. You know, some young guys will step up. It's going to be Adam Fantilli's team. He was on our show a couple of weeks ago. I think he's probably under a lot of pressure. Marchenko, is he going to step up? There's going to be a lot of losses coming for this team. But I think, importantly, they just need to get past this time. You know, deal with the Johnny Gaudreau situation, the death, and just move forward. It's not easy. So, I don't know. What else can you say about the Blue Jackets?
Yeah, I think you're just looking at them. The two things that come to mind are you want to see some steps forward from the young kids. Obviously, Adam Fantilli is arguably the most important player in that franchise right now, depending on how things shake out. But Marchenko, Kent Johnson, the kid they just drafted, Caden Lindstrom, who probably won't be in the NHL. But you want to see those guys all take some measurable step forwards. I think Fantilli, 50 points is what he said. I think that's a great goal for him. The other thing that, and I know all the teams that are at the bottom of the standing say this, is just being hard to play against.
Yeah.
Just like have the effort, keep the team together, keep the spirits high, like have something to play for later in the season. You're probably not even going to be a seller because you don't have a ton of pieces that other teams are going to be calling for. Maybe a Boone Jenner, maybe a Werenski, you know, if they feel like they can get something for him. But I think this is going to be largely the same team next year, just taking a step forward, staying healthy, and trying to keep spirits up as much as you can.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it right on the head. All right, moving on. Division leader, predictions. Who do you got? Who's winning this division?
I'm going to go with the regular season being the New York Rangers.
I'll agree. I think they're going to continue to hold the podium. I think they're going to be pushed by the Islanders. I really think the New York Islanders are going to have a good regular season. All right, playoff teams in this division. Obviously, the Rangers are in, the Hurricanes are in. Who do you have after that? They have one more for sure, and then maybe a wild card.
I'm going to go with just one more of the Devils. I think I'm going to stand put with the other two wild cards coming from the Atlantic.
I thought you said the Penguins were going to get in. Maybe.
No. Maybe. Okay. I think it'll be close, but no.
I'm going to go 4. I'll do Canes, Rangers, Islanders, Devils. I think those are my 4 getting in. But yeah, none of those will be any kind of dangers for a Stanley Cup winner. I think this division is on the way down, at least for the next few years. That being said, I'm on the way down too. It's time to go to bed. Just kidding. I'm out of here. Thank you for joining us, everybody. I appreciate the support. We'll talk to you guys later this week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.